Un saluto a tutti, io sono Simone Mariam di Meet Dolcino, mettete mi piace al video e iscrivetevi al canale. Oggi abbiamo con noi una grande ospite, Vera Sharav. Vera Sharav, sopravvissuta all'Olocausto, è un'attivista nel campo medico ed è la fondatrice dell'Alliance for Human Research Protection ed è anche un'attivista contro alcune pratiche dell'industria biomedica, in particolare in materia di consenso dei pazienti e dei bambini. Hi Vera, how are you?
I'm all right. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Thank you very much for joining us. It's a real honor and pleasure to have you here. So I'd like to start our interview asking you if you would like it, if you could briefly introduce yourself to our audience, and also if you could tell us what about these days reminds you of what happened in Europe during the Nazi occupation and why.
Yes, I was 3 and a half in Romania when my world fell apart, because that's when we were chased out of our home. We were deported to a concentration camp in Ukraine, where my father died when I was less than five. He died of an infectious disease, typhus. This was rampant in all the camps and the ghettos because of the conditions, the overcrowding and no hygiene and starvation. So most of my personal memories of that period were as a child. But one of the things that I've learned is that most adults don't realize how much children absorb. Children listen, children recognize signals, and even if adults try to hide their fear, children feel it. And they, in such traumatic circumstances, children actually become much more grown up than their age. They grow up too fast. Never did I ever think that at this stage in my life, I would again be bearing witness to a horror. We are now, today, confronted with a war, not against the Jews alone, a war against humanity. And there are very disturbing parallels. As a survivor, I'm particularly troubled by Holocaust deniers. What I'm referring to are those who vehemently deny that there are any similarities. They refuse to recognize and refuse to hear about the bringing together what happened then and what happened now. Essentially, the parallels are between the prelude to the Holocaust and some of the signs that are currently, that we're facing, essentially a state of medical martial law. Anyone who makes these comparisons is censored and vilified, silenced. Well, the most important parallel between the Holocaust and today is the weaponization of medicine. This is what was unique about the Holocaust compared to other genocides until now. Because now it's again, medicine has been weaponized.
Absolutely, absolutely. I would like to ask you about, in Italy, we do have a lifetime, Italian lifetime senator. Maybe you know her. Her name is Liliana Segre, also a Holocaust survivor. She said in an article from Rai News, and I quote, that the impossible comparison between the Jewish persecution and the provision of vaccines are follies, gestures in which bad taste crosses with ignorance. Yeah. I would like to understand your position on this. Why is it that a part of the Jewish world seems to see no similarity?
Denial is, as I said, I call it Holocaust denial.
Yes.
Because if you don't learn from history and apply the lessons to the time that you're living in, then you haven't learned the history. By keeping the Holocaust as something totally separate, it's just like a religion, you know, that keeps, oh my God, you cannot touch, you cannot criticize. No. That's not the way it works. And I believe very much in the openness and the exchange of ideas. It's fine if you don't agree. We can disagree. We can argue. That's fine. But to silence one part of the discussion, of the reality of history, what they're doing is at the same time, they're using the same tactic to silence scientists and doctors who disagree with the current official narrative. No one is allowed to say anything again about the lack of safety measures with the vaccine. It's the same thing. It's the same mindset. Whenever someone wants to silence a topic, prevent discussion, it means they have something to hide. If they didn't, they'd be perfectly willing, like intelligent human beings, to have a debate.
I do absolutely agree that we need a debate because the censorship is getting stronger and stronger.
Yes.
Every day.
Mm-hmm.
I have another question about the Green Pass. What do you think about the Green Pass? I mean, in Italy, it's called Green Pass. It's the COVID Pass. Do you think that some hypothetical, very influential, rich Jew part of the establishment is ready to deny the connection between the Green Pass, the COVID Pass, and the Yellow Star? Because we know what the Capos did during those years.
Yeah, that's part of what I was going to talk about, so definitely. You see, the vaccines are one thing, but the vaccines open the door to the digital identity passport. Now, that passport has, in fact, a direct parallel with the Holocaust. It was already known, both the prelude and the actual Holocaust. And that is IBM. IBM's technology, it was not digital at that time. It was very clumsy, but it did its job. It was an identity tracking and surveillance system on punch cards. IBM provided Hitler with the means to rapidly execute. They were the facilitators. What they did was they hired thousands of people to do census, first in Germany and then in the occupied countries. And that census included all kinds of personal information, of course, including race, religion, but also property, education, schooling, financial information. It had a lot of information. And when they were ready to proceed with the Holocaust and to massively deport people to killing camps, it was the IBM tracking system that helped them to quickly identify separate, segregate, discriminate, deport. And IBM even took care of the train schedule to make sure that the human beings being delivered were on schedule. So this is how within, you know, that part happened in less than a year and a half. It was toward the end of the war. In some Jewish communities, like the Hungarian ones, it was at the last months, even when they knew that they were already losing. They were in a rush, and IBM helped them to do that. They tracked people at concentration camps as well. IBM machines were at most camps. And they had a central office in which they, it was pretty advanced. When you think about today's technology, the concepts were all there. It's just they didn't have the electronic. But really, they tried to be there to do everything centrally, total control. And that's what the green passports are supposed to facilitate. They will include personal information, not only vaccination, your other medical history. Just think what having the entire world population medical records available to pharmaceutical companies, my goodness, they can then plan their next their next vaccine, their next drugs, just by knowing what the conditions of the world's population is and what kind of problems they may have, you know, and then you wind up having chronic patients forever. They will include your bank account, your credit cards. They pretty much are getting ready to control every aspect of people's lives, more so than most people can even imagine. They will control, they will know who your friends are, who you've gone to bed with. They will know everything by your comings and goings. It'll all be on, you know, on your phone.
Don't you, so keep going.
The, you know, New York State Governor Cuomo contracted IBM for its digital Excelsior passport. Now, obviously, the Excelsior passport is much more sophisticated than their punch card system. But the purpose is the same. The purpose is to gain control of the population. What is unfortunate is that so many people have gotten, they almost have a love affair with their iPhone. You know, the convenience. They didn't realize that while they were able to track their friends, you know, if they made it to the restaurant on time or whatever, they didn't realize how much information was being taken from them. Because the internet and the whole electronic system, it's a two-way highway. And we, the users, are the least, you know, we get the least information. We know nothing about the people who run those companies. They keep everything tightly under control secret. Just think about the vaccines. We don't know what's in the contracts. We don't know what's in the vaccines. There are now scientists who are beginning to examine a few vials, and what they're finding is horrific. None of this has been disclosed. And yet, here is the world population in a huge medical experiment, uncontrolled medical experiment with a product that has never been used in humans before, that has not undergone basic safety tests. It went through Operation Warp Speed. Speed, that was the issue, speed. And that's the reason that those contracts are so tightly controlled, and why everyone involved, the manufacturers, the public officials, and those who are giving the shots, they all have complete immunity from liability for harm. If somebody is harmed or dies, there's no recourse, even though we've all been lied to because we've been told, oh, these vaccines are perfectly safe and effective. Well, right now, the most highly vaccinated country, Israel, is having the worst infectious rate. After being vaccinated, more than a million, the third shot. So I don't quite think that the vaccines, quote, work. If they don't prevent infection, what do they work? Ah, that's a whole other area. I won't speculate on things, but scientists are finding out some of the secrets. The point is, when the Holocaust ended and whatever survivors survived were rescued, right? They were rescued by the Allied forces, the United States, United Kingdom, and the Soviet Union. The one most important thing that happened after was the Nuremberg trials. I am really only interested in the doctor's trial. That was the most important trial because it brought out to public light the horrific, ghastly medical atrocities to the world.
Definitely. Don't you think that this plan is maybe too big? And maybe it might be somehow at some point uncontrollable. What do you think?
That what would be uncontrollable? The plan, you mean the Great Reset?
Yeah, because in the Second World War, it was Germany and a few occupied countries, and Japan, but that's it. Now it seems to involve the whole world.
Oh, no, it is. The plan is absolutely for the entire human.
Yeah, don't you think it's too big? Maybe it might find some crack in the system, or it might fail because it's too big.
This cabal, this absolute conspiracy, is a very small elite, a small global elite. We are the billions. If people rebel, they can't do it. This is the most important time in our lives, whoever is alive now. This is the time to say no, to resist. Absolutely. Then it can't be done. One of the problems has been why we've gotten so far into this is that while the virus, or so-called virus, was genetically engineered in a laboratory to be more infective and more lethal, the people, the population all across the world has been in a state of fear, and that fear was psychologically engineered. It began with the lockdowns. The lockdowns glued people to their television. And that's how the propaganda began. And the propaganda has been incessant with tales of horror. We began, and how did the lockdowns begin? With a big lie. A mathematical modeling prediction tool that was calculated to create panic. It said that hundreds of millions were going to die. So it just scared everyone to death, and they've been in the grip of fears ever since. It was a lie. There were lots of lies during 2020, before the vaccine, and since the vaccine. Most of what you hear and read in the mainstream press and even the journals, the medical journals, they are adhering to an official lie that is intended to keep us in fear. Fear is what the don of propaganda, Goebbels, he knew. Fear is all you need. You don't need much more. With fear, you can control people. Now, people need to understand, one of the reasons for the for gaining control is that they can control, and this has shown it, they can control big communities, big crowds. But they can't quite control individuals. And we, who are standing up to it and speaking out, are who they want to get rid of the most, because we're spoiling, you know, we're creating a little bit of a rumpus, even a tiny little teacup rumpus is, they can't bear it. They can't control us. And I have to say that in my years, one of the things that I have learned, and it's very much true today, is that the most important thing that we need to keep in mind as human beings is the sanctity of the individual. It is a false, absolute, wrong ethos to say you have to do things for the greater good. No. When you give up on the individual, and this starts really, again, it's absolutely the most focal thing in medicine. A doctor who swears the Hippocratic Oath, first, do no harm. It's to the individual. He swears not to hurt the individual patient. To do only what's best in the interest of the individual patient. And when they tell you, no, no, you must think of the greater good, no. A society where individuals' rights are trampled is an evil society.
Definitely.
You can't have democracy without individual participation as individuals.
Definitely. The greater good is a mischievous concept. I mean, because of the greater good, you can do anything you like because you justify because it's the greater good. And that's a big problem. That's a big problem. They're pushing for it now, I suppose.
But you see, nobody is asking the ones telling you, is Bill Gates doing things for the greater good? Is Tony Fauci doing things for the greater good? Huh? Is Klaus Schwab doing things for the greater good? They're the ones who are pretending, right? Oh, the greater good, the great. Yeah. In the meantime, their coffers you know, offshore and all the secret bank accounts and all that are just overflowing. While we are told to do the one of the most obscene things, and I do want to bring this parallel up, it's very important, and that is that Jews were not the only ones who were caught up in the dragnet of genocide. The first medically murdered victims of the Holocaust were German infants and children under three. Their crime? They were disabled in some form. So they were regarded as expendable. Next were the mentally ill. And then other disabled. And finally, nursing home and long-term care residents. It was called Aktion T4. And it was being conducted from 1939 to 1945, the entire period of the war. More than 1,000 babies and children were medically murdered. Some of them were subjected to starvation diet so that the doctors could record how long it took a child to die from starvation. 6 hospitals were transformed into the killing stations. T4 was a pivotal aspect in preparation for the Holocaust. They tested various methods of medical murder, including the gas. What happened in March and April of 2020? Officials, heads of state, issued murderous decrees targeting the elderly in nursing homes. This happened all over Western Europe. The most advanced, wealthy countries with the highest standard of living. They used the opportunity of the pandemic to be rid of human beings they decided had no value and they posed an economic burden. The obscenity, and this was everywhere, we're talking about the United States, Canada, Italy, Sweden, Belgium, everywhere. The fact that a lot of the dictates during this pandemic have been almost identical all over the world tells you that it's planned. They're going according to a plan. What they were telling us all was that, oh, the elderly have to be protected. They're vulnerable to the virus. Therefore, we have to protect them. And how did they protect them? By not treating them and through injections, by killing them. The vast majority of those who actually died from COVID were the elderly. And they died either from no treatment, which hospitals were ordered, do not treat them, send them to nursing homes. In my own state of New York, Governor Andrew Cuomo predicted before he issued his murderous order, he predicted that the virus in nursing homes will be like fire through dry grass. Fire through dry grass. And then he issued the order. He is a mass murderer of more than 15,000 human beings. And I'm sure you have your own similar.
Yeah, we do. We do have our similar things, yeah.
As you said,
it happens all over the world. Oh, Western world, mostly.
Western. No, this is important,
Western
too.
Western world, mostly. Yeah, definitely.
This is important because the Western world feels so superior to the Eastern world, right? Well, guess what? The Western world is behaving so much worse. So much worse. In the poorer countries, they're treating people with ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, whatever they can get their hands on. But here, governments prohibit doctors from utilizing curative available medications for COVID. They're not allowed to save lives. Dr. Didier Raoult in France, he's being crucified for having alerted doctors what works. And since then, Dr. Zev Zelenko, a New York family physician, followed Dr. Raoult's protocol and then created several more protocols. He saved more than 6,000 people without 3 deaths. Now, that's a ratio that nobody, no hospital can match. And these people didn't need hospitals. In the hospitals, even now, they're killing patients. The ventilators are killing patients. That's what killed patients in hospitals then, and they're still using it. They're still not allowing the cures to be used by doctors, and doctors who use them lose their license.
It's somehow dangerous to go to hospital now.
Well, but let's think. Why would they forbid doctors from prescribing drugs that are fully FDA licensed, have been used for decades, so they have a long safety track record? What is the crime of repurposing a drug that's approved for one illness to another? Doctors have always done this. This was perfectly legal until now. With COVID, you're not allowed to. Why? You want to know why?
Yeah, obviously.
It's strictly an issue of profits and politics. The two poisons. If there is an available treatment, curative treatment, you cannot allow an experimental drug or vaccine to be used by the public. Can't do it. The only way you can get emergency use authorization for an experimental drug or vaccine is if there is no other in existence.
Definitely.
And now, on August 23rd, the FDA added another crime to its long list. It gave approval to a Pfizer mRNA vaccine, you can look it up, the name, it's a made-up name anyway. But guess what? That's not the vaccine that is being used and that will continue to be used in millions of people. The one that they gave approval to it doesn't exist. Now, why would they do that? And without any safety evaluation, without the advisory committee, I mean, they did away with everything. They just like that. Why? Here's what I believe. The vaccines that were given emergency use authorization, and there are four of them, those manufacturers and everyone involved has absolute immunity from all liability for any harm or deaths or anything. Whether it's negligent, doesn't matter. They have total immunity because presumably it was an emergency and nobody could tell, you know, what might happen and so forth. But you see, this is an extremely valuable safeguard for the manufacturer. I mean, Pfizer just loves it. But you see, in the United States, as of August, has been very slow in the uptake of the vaccine. Only 51% of Americans have been vaccinated with one of these vaccines. 49% have not. Among African Americans, among blacks, 75% said no. That's a big problem for the government and their partners. You know, these are all government and the pharmaceutical company in particular. They have many, many public-private partnerships, it's called. It means essentially the government stopped being accountable to us, the ones who they're supposed to represent, and instead they're working together for profit. Everybody's profiting in this. This is how everything's been turned on its head. We think of democracy. It hasn't been a long time. But anyway, so that's why they decided they needed to push the mandates. And they can't do mandate with emergency use authorization. Lots of lawyers have looked into that. They can't do that. The only way they can mandate in the United States is if it's approved. So FDA did the approval, but there it is, a sleight of hand. Which vaccine is approved and which vaccine is still under emergency use? Lots of tricks, all dirty. If it wasn't so tragic, if the human casualties of those who have taken the vaccine wasn't escalating every single day, the death numbers keep going up. But the public doesn't know that. They've created a unvaccinated pandemic. The unvaccinated pandemic. It's a total lie. The harm that is being done now is another thing about why they need to, why they're in such a frenzy, I would say, to vaccinate everybody. Notice I said before that whoever is taking the vaccine is a human subject in an uncontrolled mass clinical trial, a phase 3 trial. We, the unvaccinated, are the unwanted controls. If we stay healthy and nothing happens, you know, we may have had COVID by now and have immunity. We spoil the plan. That's the problem. We spoil the plan. And as many of us is resist and do not go along, we will win. It's only by giving in, by obeying authority. One of the things that that has come up from my memory, from my childhood memories, is how I was disobedient. And it saved my life. Just very briefly. I was separated from my mother when I was 6. She remained in the camp and I was rescued. Now, I was en route. I was, for more than 10 months, I was essentially a child en route, no parents. So one of the things that I relied on was the kindness of strangers. But I had to pick who I entrusted myself to. That's not an ordinary thing. On the train to the harbor where we were en route to Istanbul and from there to Israel before it was a state. This was in 44. En route to the boats, I befriended a family on the train. But when we got to the harbor, there were 3 small boats that were there to take us. These were small, rickety things, nothing like, you know, no luxury liner. I was assigned to go with all the orphan children on the one boat with all the orphan children. I refused. I absolutely refused. And I do remember very well how I sat on my valise and had crying, wouldn't go. No matter what, everybody went according to where they were assigned, except I stood, you know, I sat there alone and just cried and screamed and cried. In the end, I prevailed. I don't know whether a child today having, you know, what they would call a temper tantrum, I don't think they would give in. They'd call them oppositional defiant disorder and whatever and give them drugs. But I did prevail. And the reason that I was so adamant, I realized, you know, I'm trying to analyze it myself later, years later. The reason I was so adamant is because I was little and I didn't like being with the other kids, you know, bullies bigger than me. I knew I couldn't deal with that. I was an only child, you know, so I didn't have good experience in how to negotiate with bigger children. So I trusted adults. And the first night out at sea, one of the boats was a little faster, so it was ahead of us. But the boat I was in and the boat with the children were more or less near each other. Now, I was down, I was asleep, because I used to get very seasick. And so anyway, they gave me something to sleep. But during the night, a submarine torpedo boat with all the children. There were no survivors. I learned about it the next morning. I didn't say a word. Not a word. But I thought, right? But I also had a pang of guilt. The guilt was that I was glad to be alive. And, you know, of course, it could have been the other way around. It could have been that the torpedo would have hit my boat. That's not the point. The point is to go with your own gut, your own instinct. That's what you come to the world with. You learn from your own mistakes. But when you just obey authority without thinking, you're not an adult, certainly. Very, very smart Benjamin Franklin said that it was the duty and responsibility of every citizen not to obey authority. That's what holds a democracy together. When you obey authority, that's dictatorship.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a great message. That's a great, it's a very profound message. And I agree with you that we don't have to comply with the power and with the authority.
No, you don't. And I know how difficult it is. And how difficult it is to be a pariah, you know, to be, they say COVID idiots. That's what we are, COVID idiots. All sorts of names, all sorts of pejorative. Well, that's just it. That whole background is what suddenly I, you know, connecting the dots. It's exactly the same pattern. The same pattern of creating apartheid. You know, since I lived in that, I know what it is. And the more you give in, the more they'll insist on other restrictions, other denials, other ways to make your life more miserable. You will never, ever be in control of your life at all if you give in now. This is the time to resist. It's imperative. Everybody's life depends on it, including yours.
Yes, absolutely.
This is one of the things. Tyrannical regimes do this sort of thing. They've been playing with people. Now you have to lockdown, and then next week maybe not, and the restaurant maybe is allowed to be open till 8 o'clock and then only till 10. I mean, this is a con. Then you have to be masked, right? And even masked outside, masked inside. In Australia, they're pepper spraying children who are without masks outside. I mean, it is as bad as, yes, this is the way the Nazis did things too. And one of the things that a lot of other Western countries, people in Western countries who thought about, you know, knew something about the Second World War, and they couldn't understand, how could the Germans allow this to, you know, how could that happen? Well, just look around at every masked person. That's how. And this is all very psychologically scheduled even. Yeah. Look how they weaponize medicine and psychology. I realized that's very essential, you see, because by having the medical and academic professions go along with the regime gives it a veneer of respectability of ethics. It's not. It's just a veneer. It's a fake. That's what's fake. And fake news is what we've been fed all the time now. People need to look for the alternative sources of information. It, as hard as they are making it and taking websites down and all the harassment, nevertheless, there's a very rich body of alternative sources of, yes, of accurate information. Information that you need if you want to live like a human being.
Absolutely. And 49% of American people are not following, apparently, the order of the authorities. So these alternative source of information are working in a good way, let's say.
But, of course, you realize that now they are intensifying the really choking people.
Yeah.
Because now, and this happened exactly, that's the way it went with the Jews. The Holocaust happened in stages. Nothing happened overnight. I mean, this wasn't that all of a sudden there's Auschwitz. No. It was in stages, piece by piece. Each, you know, in other words, as they eliminated and disenfranchised the Jews slowly. That's what's happening here. Now the government in the United States has said no more employment for unvaccinated in any of the government agencies and the military, and lots of major companies, same thing, JP Morgan, of course, Microsoft, Facebook, all of them. No, unvaccinated, not one, you know, there are already, somebody already has a sign, unvaccinated, unwanted, you know, like in front of a window of a shop. That's what, okay, used to be niggers weren't allowed in, right? And this is the same thing. People need to recognize that, yes, they're going after the unvaccinated now, but they're going to come after everyone. Whoever at some point will not want to do something or will not want to sacrifice their child, that's when they'll face it. There was a judge in Chicago just a couple of weeks ago. He removed an 11-year-old child from her mother's custody because she was unvaccinated.
This is terrible.
The last I heard, though, he had to overrule himself because there was pushback. But that's how bad it is. And that's why I say it can only get worse if people comply. If you want to take the shot, go right ahead. I would never tell anybody what to do with their body, what medicine to take. I have no right, and I wouldn't dream of it. But I have a right to say no. I have that right legally since the Nuremberg Code. Now let's talk about the Nuremberg Code. The Nuremberg Code was part of a court verdict in the Nazi doctors' trial. In 1947, when the horrors came out about the medical atrocities, the judges realized that this was more than ordinary crimes of war. These were crimes against humanity, and they had to figure out, and they crafted 10 principles that lay down under what circumstances you may do research on human beings. The first and foremost principle is the voluntary consent, then voluntary informed consent of the human subject is absolutely essential. And they explain what informed means, what voluntary means. No coercion, no bribery, no fraud, okay? And informed, everything about the experiment, the methods used, the ingredients, the tested, whatever it is, drug, vaccines, and they mention drugs, vaccines, they have to disclose what's in them. They have to inform people before they are allowed to be subjects what the foreseeable risks may be and that there may be others that might impinge on their health. They have to disclose all this. Well, of course, with the COVID injections, they've disclosed nothing. In fact, they've lied. They lied that this was perfectly safe, that it was FDA approved everywhere across the world. I was hearing about how they, oh, this was FDA approved. No, it wasn't. There's a huge difference between approval, which is a license, and emergency use authorization. Now, the Nuremberg Code is an international law. It was incorporated into the International Criminal Code, and it is effective. It provides these human rights to every human being. And unlike most other medical standards like the Helsinki or United States, we have the Code of Federal Regulations. All those can be changed. You can't change the Nuremberg Code. It's part of a court decision that has never been challenged. And it is part of international law. It crosses borders. And it holds accountable those who conduct the trials, those who fund the trial, and it holds those responsible whether they themselves initiated a trial that wasn't ethical or whether they followed orders, state orders. The Nuremberg Code protections are above state government policies. So if there's an evil state policy, the Nuremberg Code will hold everyone responsible who goes along with the illegal, essentially, it's immoral state policy. That never happened before. And I don't know that it's happened since. You see, that's the problem. The Nuremberg Code needs to be used more often. It's been used very sparingly, but it's been used. And I was involved in two cases where the judges absolutely cited the Nuremberg Code. So the laws are different in the different countries. And in the United States, most cases have to follow a precedence. So the more precedence you have, the better chance you have of convincing, you know, the judge. Because nobody wants to make a moral decision on their own. They want precedent. So the only way to have precedence is to keep arguing Nuremberg. And then you'll have lots of precedents. And I hope that during this time, you know, there are many, many lawsuits prepared and for filing. And some of them, you know, will be on our side, and some already have been. So this is very important because this is our weapon our moral weapon, the Nuremberg Code, because the Nuremberg Code holds that, yes, the right to voluntary informed consent is just each human being. It sets human beings apart from animals. Not that I'm for torturing animals, but humans are on a different level. And when we talk about those who are planning the Great Reset or the New World Order or the Fourth Industrial Revolution, notice how many different, they're trying to get it from all angles. To them, not only are we not in any way special compared to animals, we're no better than widgets. You know, they just think of us as technological databases from which to extract information that they can use. It's a very diabolical plan, and it's there for people to read. Just go on the World Economic Forum and you can read the entire thing. It's all laid out. I'm not making up a word of it. Not at all. On the contrary, you'll be pretty horrified to realize what it is they're planning, how dystopian it is, how totally they want to strip human beings of their humanity. These people have absolutely no human empathy whatsoever.
Definitely.
And they want to do that to the rest of us.
Definitely. Definitely. We need to appeal to the Nuremberg Code. We need to... I know that there is a German attorney, Rainer Fulmich, that...
Yes.
I think it was one of the first who brought up the Nuremberg Code, I suppose.
Well, I
think he's doing a great job, isn't he?
Yeah, well, there are many. I mean, he's one. Yeah, he helps a lot of lawyers all over to, you know, if they need experts and things, he helps with that. But he understands, yeah, the importance and the usefulness of going with Nuremberg. Yeah, I mean, sure, governments don't like it because government leaders would be held accountable too, you see. So, of course, obviously the politics is tremendous there. But nevertheless, if enough people, you know, and what's interesting, there's a case, it was a federal case decided in New York against Pfizer using Nuremberg.
So there is a precedent.
Yes. Oh, there are several. This happens to be with Pfizer. Yes. Okay. Where in Kenya, was it? I think Kenya. They used children to test an experimental antibiotic, and children died, and children had irreparable damage. And the lawyer, it was a very tough, many years it took because it's very difficult, but got it into one court denied him that there was no jurisdiction. But federal court said, and Pfizer lost the case and had to pay some damages. That's very important.
Definitely.
I mean, one of the things about all of this is, yes, who is Pfizer? Who's Moderna? This is one of the worst companies with the longest rap sheet, as we call it, you know, criminal and civil rap sheet of all the pharmaceuticals.
Definitely, definitely. And people need to see it because some people seem to be blind to it.
Well, one of the ironies, I guess, is that most people cannot imagine what evil really, really is. They can't imagine that another person would really purposely do such evil, murderous thing to other human beings. They can't believe it because they're not. You see, they don't they're not evil. So they can't imagine someone else actually being that evil. That's why they think that we're, oh, conspiracy theory, conspiracy. This is no theory. I wish it was. I wouldn't be upset. I wouldn't have sleepless nights if it was a theory.
Definitely. 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 This interview, I think, is very precious. And I think it's, I can say, maybe the most important interview we had. One of the most important interviews.
How do you get it out to people, though, after all? Are you going to translate it or what?
I'm going to translate subtitles. I'm going to put subtitles in it. So I'm going to work tomorrow.
Oh, I see.
In the next few days, it will be posted on our YouTube channel and on our blog. And I will send it to you so you can share as many people as you can. And if you have something more to add, you are more than welcome to do it.
I just want people to realize that all is not lost yet. And it's very important for people to get together with others, with groups that are trying to fight this. You'll get more energized. I mean, let me tell you, at my age, I am so, if I wasn't so immersed with work, with trying to keep up and with doing all of this, I would be very depressed. I would be really, really depressed. It's important not to get depressed. It's important to realize that, no, we can stop it. We can stop it. And I know there have been demonstrations in Italy and in France and in Germany and in the UK. We have some in New York, but in the United States, the demonstrations are not as big. And don't forget, we had another problem, which was January 6th, where they pretended that there was an attempted coup d'etat. There was no coup d'etat. This was nonsense. But it has put the Homeland Security and militarized police trained and at the ready. So people know that. And it's risky. In fact, Homeland Security just a week ago put the unvaccinated as local terrorists. How's that? This is the way you isolate and really demonize people and set them up for just shooting them down. I mean, this is an invitation to violence. So Americans, especially those who are rebelling, they don't have to be very careful. No violence. It's got to be very much civil disobedience.
Yes, keep going.
I wanted to read to you one thing, which Hannah Arendt,
the philosopher,
her description of isolation, of what it does in her book, Origins of Totalitarianism. And she says, terror can rule absolutely only over people who are isolated against each other. Therefore, one of the primary concerns of tyrannical government is to bring this isolation about. Isolation may be the beginning of terror. This fits exactly to the COVID undisclosed narrative, but what we're seeing.
Yes, it's what they're trying to do. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you've given us many information, but not just information. This, your voice, I think it's very important now, because your message is very profound and your life experience could teach us a lot of things, you know, because you are a witness of, you've been a witness of a very dark time, and you live on your skin what happened, and you know, you you experience directly. So you can help us recognizing the horror that it might we might live again, you know, because these are the nephew of the Second World War, you know, that I think the people in charge, you know, and as you said, they don't really care about us. We are just we're just a bunch of information, and they need to, and they just want to extrapolate some information, yes. and that's it, you know. And so I think we need to gather and we need to do civil disobedience and this kind of stuff. And your message today is very appreciated. And I'm sure the Italian public would be very glad to hear your voice and your message, because it's very important that you're doing. And we want to thank you for having accepted our invitation. This is a great honor, you know, to have you here. And because with your voice, we can do something even here. We can help some people here as well to understand better what's happening, you know, because people.
That's what I hope, because people need to feel that, you know, that what they're sensing is something wrong. Yes. There's something very wrong, and it'll only get worse if you comply.
Absolutely. But from the 6th of August in Italy, something has changed, because with the approbation of the Green Pass, mm-hmm. many people have woken up from straight. I mean, like, many people have understood, like, from one day to another, you know, they felt themselves like, how can I say? They feel themselves like they are like the authority is going and grab them and trying to force them to do something, and they see a lot of resemblance with Nazi history, you know. So many people are waking up now in Italy. I'm telling you, it's incredibly fast, you know, the awakening of people now, you know.
Well, that's important, and that needs to be, you know, helped and supported and encouraged, because that's what will win in the end. It's only that. It's really people waking up to their. I mean, I'm deeply horrified by the fact that the Israeli public has so completely gone along and totally trusting. I mean, their children, more Jewish children, have had this injection probably than any other. I mean, it's insane.
This is a big mystery to me as well.
Well, it's what it shows, though, is what I said to you, and people are people. People are individuals. And you've got gullible people in all different groups. You've got saints and you've got, you know, devils. Everybody. It doesn't matter. So the difference is whether it's a country or religion or whatever. All that is very much beside the point. The importance is how the individual, what kind of moral a compass do you go with? And when you go with, again, with a group, this is groupthink. It's got all kinds of names, but that's what happened there. They are so trusting, and it's the craziest thing. Those of us on the outside now realize, I mean, my God, it's like creating a ghetto.
Yes.
They do not conceive that their government could have deceived them the way they have. They really can't believe it.
Yeah,
it's just terrible. And but I think that eventually, if you know, when we win, when we overcome, you know, remember there was a song, "We Shall Overcome." This is what needs to be the anthem. Then one needs to assess what has been wrong with education. That's what led to all this. the education, which has been a system evidently of not teaching children to solve problems and think for themselves and be willing to go against the teacher. So what's the crime?
Yeah, definitely.
You know, but instead, I know how it is in America. They're taught to repeat what the teacher told. The more you can repeat the exact words, you'll get an A.
Yeah.
That's wrong.
It's the same here.
That's wrong. You see, yeah. Part of it is, you know, the influence of people like Bill Gates. He funded some educations in the United States. It failed miserably, but it set the thing in motion anyway. Often, you know, it's very insidious. Sometimes something is started and you think that it's gone, but it isn't. The bureaucrats have a way of cementing it, you know, and it doesn't disappear. Just like in hospitals. There are really a senator during the Obama years, he tagged it death squads. And when people heard that, oh my God, death squad. So they thought it was over. No, it's not. It's going on. Families are being pushed to put their loved one who is sick to hospice care when they're still, you know. Yeah. And those get paid more than other doctors. That's how it's done. The same thing happened, and I'm sure it must be in Italy too, the United States. Hospitals got more money if they treated COVID patients with the COVID protocol, which meant the ventilators that killed. They got higher pay for that than other patients.
Yeah.
So they didn't want to treat other patients because they were getting more money. See, this is how the corruption takes over an entire institution, everything.
Yeah, it is. The hospitals here are blocking you if you don't have the green pass. Some hospitals, you know, they let you die outside, you know, if you don't have the green pass. Some hospitals. So this is, it's getting fast, you know, like this plan is growing fast, but hopefully, as you said,
it can be stopped.
It can be stopped. And we can overcome it.
They can't do it if they don't have enough people. And actually, I don't know, you know, what the percentage is needed, but I'm not a gambler. but it can be stopped and we have to.
Absolutely.
And I think that if people, as long as people are going to the streets and all that, I think that's very important.
Definitely.
Because they gain just by being with others like them, so they don't feel so isolated. The isolation is terrible. Isolation, of course, was a punishment that was used to incarcerate the elderly as well. I mean, a lot of them also died from just, you know, isolation, depression. They had nothing to live for.
Yeah, definitely. So thank you very much for your time today. Thank you. We really appreciate all of your words and your message. So I just want to say thank you and maybe bye. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I hope sometime maybe I can return to Rome.
Yeah, you will. You will be our guest. Don't worry. Yeah? Okay. Thank you. Have a nice day. Thank you.
You too. Thank you.